Welcome to the Citizen Media Law Podcast, providing practical knowledge and tools for citizen journalists. I'm Colin Reinsmith, digital media producer at the Citizen Media Law Project. This week, we'll hear from David Ardia about the new federal shield bill passed by the U.S. House. I'll talk about co-blogging and cease and desist letters, and Sam Bayard will discuss the Phoenix New Times arrests.
Last week, the U.S. House of Representatives overwhelmingly passed, for the first time ever, a federal shield bill by a vote of 398-21. This follows the passage of a similar bill by the Senate Judiciary Committee on October 4th. The House version, however, makes a critical change in the language regarding who is entitled to the bill's qualified protections by excluding those who do not receive, quote, substantial financial gain, unquote, for their activities. This change in the House bill significantly narrows its coverage and is plainly aimed to exclude non-traditional journalists. But it doesn't just exclude those who some in Congress derisively call bloggers. The new definition would likely exclude many freelance journalists who rely on other work to supplement their incomes. Do we really want judges to be deciding whether a journalist is earning enough money to qualify for protection? More to the point, is financial remuneration the criterion we want to be using when we draw the line between those who are entitled to engage in journalism under the protection of a federal shield law and those who must venture forth unprotected? It seems to me the answer is no. To limit the privilege only to journalists who receive substantial financial gain misses the point of how media and journalism are evolving. Most crucially, it misses the growing and essential role of citizen media creators. They are the closest analog since the nation's founding to the Tom Paine-style pamphleteers the First Amendment was designed in part to encourage. Journalists, and more importantly the public, desperately need a federal shield law. What we need is a federal shield law that protects all acts of journalism, regardless of whether they are done for pay.
Mike Madison published a thought-provoking post on his Madisonian.net blog about the effect that a cease and desist letter can have on a collaborative blogging relationship. Madison used to run a blog with two other bloggers, called Blog Lebo, covering matters of local interest in Mount Lebanon, Pennsylvania. But when they got a cease and desist letter from a local lawyer, things went slightly pear-shaped. Several weeks ago, Madison blogged about a neighborhood dispute that arose when a local homeowner re-landscaped his backyard. In the process, he blocked or threatened to block a stone path understood as being protected by a recorded easement. Many readers commented on the post, and one identified the homeowner by name. Another, apparently one of Madison's co-bloggers, commented that the owner, also a lawyer, should have known better than to buy real estate without checking the records first. Days later, Madison and his co-bloggers received a letter from the lawyer homeowner demanding that they remove the post or face a defamation lawsuit. Madison, a law professor experienced in internet law, wanted to keep the post up and fight what he believed to be a baseless claim. His co-bloggers reacted differently. One wanted the post taken down immediately, and the other withdrew from the blog altogether. Madison not only took down the post, but ended up suspending Blog Lebo entirely. The surprise happy ending to the story is that Blog Lebo's readers clamored for its return. One of Madison's co-bloggers rethought the situation, and the blog is back up. But you can easily envision a less satisfactory conclusion. The problem identified in Madison's post could come up any time collaborating bloggers have different sensitivities to risk, different attitudes toward litigation, or even different time or financial commitments. Creators of citizen media should think about this dilemma before entering into a collaborative arrangement. And if you decide to join forces with others, there are a host of real legal issues that you need to consider. Some of the key questions include whether you want to form a limited liability entity, whether you should enter into a formal co-blogging agreement, and what effect revenue generation has on your legal status. These are just some of the topics we intend to take up in detail in our forthcoming legal guide.
A unique legal threat came to our attention this week that raises some interesting First Amendment questions. Starting in 2004, the Phoenix New Times published a number of articles critical of Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio. In one article on its website, the newspaper disclosed Arpaio's home address. Local authorities began a criminal investigation of the newspaper for violation of an Arizona statute that makes it a felony to publish the personal information of a police officer on the internet, if dissemination of that information poses a serious and imminent threat to the officer's safety. Notice that this statute only applies to the internet, not print. Faced with this investigation, the New Times filed a lawsuit in federal court seeking to invalidate the statute on First Amendment grounds. In late August, while this litigation was pending, the New Times received a grand jury subpoena in connection with the criminal investigation. The subpoena was extremely broad. Among other things, it asked for information about all online readers of the newspaper's website since 2004. In response, Michael Lacey and Jim Larkin, the founders of the New Times, published an article on its website. The article discussed the grand jury subpoena in detail and criticized the invasiveness of the request. Significantly, they posted a copy of the subpoena alongside the article. That same day, local police arrested Lacey and Larkin for violating the Arizona grand jury secrecy statute, which makes it a criminal offense for anyone to disclose a, quote, matter attending a grand jury proceeding, unquote. The arrest received widespread media attention. The next day, in the face of public outcry, County Attorney Andrew Thomas announced that his office was dropping all criminal charges against the newspaper. Although the outcome was a victory for the New Times, the matter raises serious questions about the breadth of Arizona's grand jury secrecy statute. The language seems to draw in anyone who discusses the content of a grand jury subpoena, regardless of how they obtain the information. The CMLP's view is that the Arizona statute, if interpreted as criminalizing this kind of discussion, would violate the First Amendment.
You've been listening to the Citizen Media Law Podcast, a production of the Citizen Media Law Project at Harvard Law School's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. To learn more, visit our website at citmedialaw.org.